Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Wine Press Play. My name is Gordo. And with me, I have Stephen Elliott, Dublin comedian, former wrestler, beard fashioner, and my co-host for this episode of Wine Press Play. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Gordo. How's things?
Very good. This time we're going to be talking about the Monster Squad.
Yes.
Classic 80s teen adventure monster movie, right?
Wonderful, awesome, brilliant.
One of my childhood favorites, even though it wasn't a commercial success.
Yes, it wasn't a big hitter. It wouldn't have been up there at like the Goonies or E.T. or Ghostbusters.
Was the Goonies up there as high as people remember? I think the nostalgia for the Goonies was more than what it made in the cinema, right?
Yeah, but I think everyone knows the Goonies. Not everyone would know the Monster Squad.
But that's a crime. They should absolutely know the Monster Squad.
That should have been packed together as a box set years ago.
Yeah. This is my time.
Yeah. It's our time down here.
The Monster Squad, for those that don't know, it's kind of like a pre-teen adventure story. It's like Stand By Me using all the old Universal Studios monsters. And
yeah, your Dracula is your Frankenstein. Yeah. It's Creature from the Blue Lagoon. No, wait. Creature from the Black Lagoon.
The Blue Lagoon is
Air Friend.
Yeah. what's
Denise Richards.
Denise, oh yeah.
Banging her brother.
Love
on
it.
An island.
I watched the one with your one from Suddenly Susan. Brooke Shields. It was in a version of Blue Lagoon as well. You got to see her bush. So Monster Squad, 1987. Seminal movie of my teens, anyway. And I saw it on TV by accident. And it looked like a movie that I shouldn't really be watching. And I was like, oh, there's kids in it my age, but there's also cursing.
Yeah, it was like a movie that no network really wanted to take a major chance on sticking on like Friday or Saturday in a primetime slot.
Yeah.
It'd usually be on like RT1 or something at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. And as the show goes on, you'll find out about my family's random VHS recording habits.
Yeah.
Where you just like, my dad would come in and go, I recorded a movie for you. I saw it on the paper and I just set the Video Plus to record like 4 movies last week. And that's one of them. You should give it a look. And I'm like, thanks, Dad. Have you got a podcast that could do recommendations? So speaking of that, Wine Press Play is the show you're listening to right now. We are on all sorts of social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. We have a Reddit for those who want to talk about movies and have the chats. And we have a website as well, winepressplay.com. If you're looking for us on any social media, it's just Wine Press Play because it's nice and handy. The right amount of letters. We also have a Discord server for chat and audio live shows. So if people listen to us live right now from our Patreon page. And Discord is like a community chat where people can come together and there's different channels and we can talk about film, TV, computer games, loads of different stuff. If you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/ypressplay and drop us a dollar or two or three or five or however many you have, and you'll get loads of extra stuff like behind-the-scenes videos, live shows, and early access to content and different materials that we're going to be producing, as well as joining in on online games and stuff with me and the other Wine Press Play kids. There's also the PS4 and Steam account perks, where you'll be able to be friends with us on our PS4 and Xbox and Steam accounts and join in on multiplayer games, where we will be streaming from Discord into the chat. And we have live shows, fingers crossed, hopefully on stage in Dublin quite soon. And we also have live watch sessions when we're watching a movie, and me and Steve will be in with a bag of chips and two microphones, and we'll watch the movie and you can watch it with us, and we just talk shit about shitty movies. So you can get all that stuff through Patreon. We're also streaming on Twitch. So hopefully in the next little while we'll be getting a nice camera set up in the studio so you can actually watch the show live on Twitch. We will be putting those videos and other videos, including reviews and movie breakdowns and top tens and all this kind of carry on. We will be putting those up on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/ypressplay, and our VidMe channel as well, which is vid.me/ypressplay. VidMe is a great alternative to YouTube if you're into it, so go over there and have a look. Loads of great creators. And you can subscribe to this podcast and any podcast player if you're listening to this somewhere out in the internet or on the website or on some weird tin cans connected homemade with string CB radio fashioned device. Do subscribe on the podcast player. We'll be putting out shows hopefully every week, at least, if not more frequently. So there'll be loads to listen to, and your favorite movie is definitely going to pop up sometime. And so let us know if anything we mentioned the show, tickles your fancy and you want to get in contact with us. info@ypressplay.com. So that's the social stuff out of the way. And for those of you joining us over from Those Conspiracy Guys, I'm That Gordo from Those Conspiracy Guys. And if you haven't listened to that show, you can head over and check us out on iTunes or on our website, thoseconspiracyguys.com. It's comedy, it's conspiracy, it's all sorts of fun. Loads of dick jokes too, I guess.
Yeah.
This episode is going to be a lot shorter than those if you are coming over from Those Conspiracy Guys. It's a brand new experience, it's a brand new show. We're going to be talking about movies. And the whole point of Y Press Play is, I feel it's the podcast version of coming home at, half two in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning with a bag of chips under your arm, kind of half drunk, half stoned, and you turn on the TV for something to watch while you're eating, and a movie comes on that you didn't expect, that you weren't prepared for, and it tickles your fancy a small bit. You're like, there's something about this thing. And you watch the whole thing, you're like, that was one of the best movies I've ever seen. And a particular experience happened to me with From Dawn Till Dusk. Did you ever watch that movie?
Yeah. Yeah. From Dusk Till Dawn.
I turned it on. I'd never heard of the film, pre kind of broadband. It was like dial up internet. So I hadn't heard of this film. George Clooney's in it, Quentin Tarantino. I was like, hey, this is quite cool. It's like another gangster movie. I've seen Reservoir Dogs. They're wearing suits. Let's watch this. And eventually it devolved into some kind of weird vampire thing. And I was fucking mad stoned. I was like, oh no, is this happening? Or if I fall asleep, like why is Harvey Keitel getting eaten? Like, it's really fucked up. And it's one of my favorite films. I thoroughly enjoyed it, the experience. And it was so unexpected. And I don't know if I would have picked that movie from the cover, or from, like, I've seen From Dusk Till Dawn, Quentin Tarantino. You're like, I don't know. Like, it was just such a surprise. It was such a nice surprise. And I kind of want to do that with this show and give out some recommendations of movies you may have skipped over, you may have overlooked, you may have said, no, I'm not into that, and not even knowing what was inside. So Y Press Play is here to recommend movies, TV shows and video games so that, you can spend less time looking and more time watching.
Nice. That's a nice slogan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Less time looking and more. That just came in my head. Because this is one of our first episodes, so we need a catchphrase, right? Y Press Play. Less time looking, more time watching.
That's nice. There's a fucking t-shirt for you.
Thanks, brain. So with all that out of the way, the intros are quite long now at the start, but they will get more succinct as we go along when people start to figure out what the show is all about. I'll stop bullshitting and we'll get right down to it. So, Steve, Monster Squad, give us the plot. This is one of our things we're going to do on the show. It's called the 60-second plot. So you have to give us the plot of Monster Squad with as little spoilers as possible. Mm-hmm. But it is 1987, so if you haven't seen it by now. With as little spoilers as possible, because we're trying to entice people into watch the movie that haven't watched it, so we don't want to ruin it for them. But also like a 60-second kind of overview. So are you ready? 60 seconds start now.
So basically, the movie opens up and you're somewhere in probably Eastern Europe and it's sort of an old castle, and doors get kicked in.
Jeez, only 60 seconds.
Jesus Christ. And you know that Dracula's in there and Van Helsing comes in. It's all going on. You see this Amelie and you say, let's do some stuff. You bring this chicken. She starts speaking in German. The whole thing opens up, a big portal opens up, a fighting ensues, and skeletons start popping over. And you jump into this portal and then it all goes to black, and then we go into modern day. We meet the Monster Squad.
Only 20 seconds.
Fucking hell, we meet the Monster Squad. And they start doing stuff. Monsters start appearing everywhere. They start talking to the police. They start to try and find them, and you get like silver bullets and all the sort of stuff that you use to fight a monster. Then what you about decide the kids? To fight them, and the, yeah, that's what the kids are doing. They're trying to fight the monster, and then you have to go to find the German guy, and the German guy helps them translate Van Helsing's diary, which for some reason is in their hometown, Louisiana. Then they have a tussle with the vampire and the werewolves and the mummy, and then try and open the portal again, and you have to try and destroy the evil, and there's hilarity ensues all the way through it. Frankenstein's in as well. Is he good? Is he bad? We'll have to figure it out. I feel like I'm narrating the bloody race.
That's it, 60 seconds.
Wow, did I get? I got most
you
of
got,
it. Yeah,
you got like a really detailed.
Yeah.
The first 2 minutes of the movie in really detailed, yeah. And then the rest of it was just like, so and then just some kids and monsters.
Yeah,
it's hard.
It is difficult. That's 60
seconds.
Especially when they're trying to do it spoiler free.
Yeah.
You know, and then you find out he's a ghost all along. Well, you can't just.
There's there's no spoilers in the first 2 minutes.
And then the credits come up and it's Dino Di Laurentiis production.
Yeah. So yeah, it's...
That's probably hard to listen to.
No, I get it. We're going to see how those 60... Some people are going to be good and some people are not going to be...
Some people are going to be as awesome as me.
Yeah, it's tough. I didn't know how tough that would be.
Yeah.
It's fun though. So we're going to try those 60-second plots with no spoilers in every show. If you want to do one yourself... on a movie, or if you want to try have a go of the Monster Squad 60-second plots, no spoilers, you can join us on Anchor, which is an audio app. So it's anchor.com/thoseconspiracyguys. You can download the app. It's kind of like a cool voicemail.
Yeah.
So you can try that. Go on to Anchor and try and drop us one. Or if you want to do something on Periscope and send it on Twitter, you can do that as well.
Yeah, I've set the bar pretty high.
Or even Snapchat. I don't know. Snapchat doesn't go 60 seconds, does it?
I don't know.
No. You can try one of those anyway. Anchor is probably the best thing because you can get a good 60 seconds out and see if you can do better than Steve. So the basic plot of the movie, Steve, without any time or any pressure, is a group of four kids. With a couple of ancillary, extra, smaller, younger kids.
Yes.
Are living in a town.
In Louisiana. And they have this little monster squad.
Yeah.
Where they're obsessed with horror movies and obsessed with vampires and werewolves and things that go bump in the night. And they act like it's all real, even though they have no kind of evidence to believe that.
But of course, like, young people are going to be fucking fantasizing about shit. And I used to draw monsters of my own design, which were basically just like amalgamations of other animals stuck together in some kind of weird...
Like a weird Dr. Moreau
sort
of a situation.
But I mean, that's anything. Any like futuristic movie or any kind of devil, awful, horrible demon movie. It's like, oh, look, it has the head of a wolf. Or, oh, look, it's a fucking snake's face.
Yeah, like, that goes back to like, you know, the stories of the Greek and Roman pantheon of the gods where you have like griffins and chimeras and Pegasus. You know, kind of stick two animals together will create something magical.
But it's already... an animal that exists or what have you.
Yeah. So you have like a minotaur is the head of a bull.
Yeah. Like in Horizon Zero Dawn, if anyone's played that on PlayStation, it's like a futuristic kind of utopian future where everyone has gone back to the earth and, you know, modern civilization as we know it has been just engulfed again by nature. And yet a sentient robot life force is creating... robots that have taken over the planet, but they look like horses and sheep and giraffes and, you know, bulls and...
Is that the general idea? And those crocodiles
and gazelles and crocodiles. Like, it's all like a fucking sentient robot, you know, intelligence is like, I will make a new breed. It looks like a crocodile. Like, it's like...
So it's like simulation theory meets creationism.
Yeah. They built the whole thing in 7 days. But it was just like, there's always an element of the familiar.
Yes.
You know, like when you dream, you can't actually dream a face that you've never seen before. So subconsciously, when you're walking around the streets, all the faces are like flying into your head and going into your memory. Or if you're like watching porn, like all the faces are going in. So you just have like a
it's not the only thing that's flying into your face.
A Rolodex of people's faces. So when you're dreaming and there's like extras... it's like a person that you've already seen. And there is something about a guy that doesn't exist that a load of people have seen and they've drawn pictures of him. We put that up on the website. It's like a guy and he has like a unibrow and he appears in people's dreams and they think it's the devil, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm dreaming about tonight, thanks.
No matter. But it just seems like the familiar ends up being, you know, recreated the whole time. So these monsters that like people would draw, I'd have like, it has like the body of a spider and the face of a snake and then like the arse of a dog and stuff like that. And you're like, it's a monster. And you're like, yeah, is it though? Yes. Like, is it not just like a mate, like a couple of animals smashed together? So these kids,
yes,
would draw these. So Sean and Patrick would draw these in school, and we open the movie on the two of them getting in trouble for, like, you're not paying attention in math class.
Yeah,
you're drawing pictures of monsters, and he's like, yeah, dude, but like, we have to be ready because what happens if monsters take over our town? And I'm like, oh shit, the kid's foreshadowing some shit right there, man.
And then they were sent home from school, and then they came back in the next day with a Tech 9 and a sonop. No, they yeah, they're told they're drawing monsters, not paying attention, and they're like, yeah, we got to be prepared for the worst. And I suppose it's just kids' imagination, kind of hoping that something like this is going to happen. It's going to happen. Like, we had a clubhouse, and we used to have military drills when we were kids.
Yeah.
Like, you're going around with your guns and your slingshots, and we used to go up into the woods and be ready to go.
I thought you meant you'd have to take off all your clothes and, like, lift up your sack to get inspected that you weren't carrying any contraband.
Every now and then, by my good friend of my granddad's used to come over, and we used to call him the Colonel. No, we used to go up into the woods on manoeuvres, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're up there for a long time, you'd have a bell maneuver. and you get accosted by junkies who enjoy Kiora. So it's
a sugary goodness.
It was what you do as a kid. You know, you have to be fixated on something.
But one of the great things about the group dynamic, and the same with the Goonies, and the same with other kind of like a coming of age group teen movies, right, was there was a hierarchy in the group, where you'd have a leader and then a sidekick that unquestioningly loves the leader and follows him. And then you'd have like the quintessential token fat kid. And then you'd have like the little tag along.
Yeah, and the little innocent one.
And then you had like one cool guy who was like, I'm strong. And, you know, like if push comes to shove, I could buy us all beer. You know, this kind of guy.
when is that going to come in as a problem? You know what this situation needs? And nagging.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Why not?
It's like you have that in, I suppose you have all those characters in the Goonies.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of like the staple for those.
You have them all in
type of movies.
The Mighty Ducks.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. So these like kid movies. If you can think of any more, tweet us at YPressPlay on Twitter and think of any more kid
centric
group with the hierarchy and the kids. Like, and one of the major, I think, draws for this movie is the unrepeated coolness of Rudy.
Yes.
And Rudy was played by Ryan Lambert. And I think it was like one of the only movies that he ever was in that he was that cool. And he kind of stopped being an actor. You know, he only made a couple of episodes of Quantum Leap and I think Murder, She Wrote, I think I read. But he wasn't in any films. He
just disappeared. It was his...
Yeah, he was in a movie called Freeze Frame with Shannon Doherty in 1992, and he now is the lead singer of a band called Kill Moi, and he's also in a band called Elephone, and he kind of moved towards music. Yeah, a little bit. He kind of moved towards music.
Yeah.
Rather than sticking with the acting.
That makes him even cooler.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, with the likes of Sean, who the character Sean was played by Andrew Gower, he stayed in the movie business and started doing an awful lot of, like, straight to Netflix.
Yeah, straight to DVD.
Movie. Yeah, like that.
TV movies and...
Earthquake 10.0.
And yeah.
Like Nanny Cam. You know those kind of weird ones that sort of like, oh, this movie was really successful. Let's make a diluted version of this.
Yeah, it's odd though, like how cool he was in that and never again. And I think maybe it was like the commercial failure of this film that kind of went, oh Jesus, I can't be in anything now because I'm going to be the guy from that film that was shite. But he arrives in, he skids in on his bike, he fucking lights a match off his heel and he lights a cigarette and he's like, what's going on here? There's a whole point where fat kid, who was Horus,
the Egyptian god of war,
who's played by Brent Chalem and Lord of Mercy on Brent, and he's getting bullied by Wayne from the Wonder Years,
with his little fluffy head,
Jason Harvey, who plays EJ, and he was pushing him and he's like, he put a
Snickers and he
candy bar
on
the ground and he's like, you only pick up your candy bar, and Rudy comes in and goes, you bully my friend Horace. And you wonder to yourself, why does he not have any friends his own age? And why is he sticking up for, you know what I mean? He was like fully ready to join the Monster Squad. And then later on, Horace meets with like Patrick and Sean and goes, guys, he wants to be in the squad. And then they go like, can you pass the test? And the test is basically like, you know, how do you kill a werewolf?
Yeah, how do you kill a vampire? You know,
yeah, like how do you kill stuff? How do you kill small animals?
But I don't know if Rudy's main motivation was to either... A, just get close to Sean's
Patrick's sister. Yeah, the blondie one. Yeah,
you know, because he heard a lot from Steve, and he said, "I might throw a length up that." Or was it like maybe he was a bully in his youth and he wanted to try and
atone for his sins
and sort of?
There's a history to Rudy in this movie that you go like, What's going on? Well, like, why is he so altruistically, you know, cooperative with this pretty childish monster squad?
Yeah.
They end up in a treehouse, and it's a fairly fucking sizable treehouse.
Yeah, it's a smashing treehouse.
Do you know, you pay like, I think, €1,600 or whatever if that was if that was in Dublin
per
City.
Month. Yeah.
So, like, he seems to be peeping on Patrick's sister, who's Sean's next door neighbor and best friend. And she's, like, getting changed and all. You don't see her bappers. But, like, she's fairly, like, quintessentially 80s hot.
Yeah, blonde hair, blue eyes.
The Debbie Gibson kind of, boop, 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 my tits stay up on their own. Yeah. And it's like, oh, shit, man.
Like, wearing a blouse but ski pants. Yeah. You know, just weird incongruous outfits.
And loads of, like, lime green and bright orange. And, like, it could be the fact that he's like, I want to get into the Monster Squad to have a look at your sister's tits. That could be it.
Yeah.
But as it goes on, he shows more and more commitment. And he has, like, a pretty good working knowledge of monsters.
Yeah, and he's a badass. Later on, he has probably one of my favorite...
Yeah.
Stepping into the breach.
Okay, well, let's...
Kind of scenes in the movie. We'll tell you about that later on.
Okay, let's get into the favorite plot points now. Okay, good. Right, let's go now. So, like, favorite plot points. We're talking about Rudy the character. One of my... And I think Steve's one of my favorite points.
Yeah. Is when there's a fight towards the end.
Yeah.
I won't spoil too much, but for anybody who's familiar with Dracula, he knows he has consorts. He usually has three moths with him.
Yeah.
Three ladies
that he can feed, that he fed on.
Yeah. And then he converted to Islam. No, then he converted to vampirism. So these three things come down the road, and they're all in the flowing white, and they're all, hey, what's going on? And everybody's like, oh, shit, here's some vampire ladies. And Rudy just takes upon himself with a bow and arrow and a cigarette hanging out of his lip to just stroll across the road towards them, unbidden, just says, I've got this. He walks across the road and they're all like, hey, Rudy, wait, come back. What are you doing? And he's like, I'm in the goddamn club, aren't I?
Yeah, with the fag, like, hanging out dangling out of his mouth. He's like, I'm in the goddamn club, aren't I? And he starts shooting him in the chest. Like, that's now such a fucking cool ass moment.
A steak. And fires it into the first one. He's like, bang. But in that moment, when he hits the first one, you're like, yeah, keep rapid fire.
Mm-hmm.
There's a look on his face that kind of says, holy shit, like, this is real.
I just did this.
I've just downed a vampire.
Yeah.
And the sort of, you can see the realization's face that even though he's a badass, he's still human as well.
Yeah.
I didn't think we'd get so deep about Monster Squad, to be honest.
Monster Squad, man, there's so much in it to enjoy, you know?
Yeah, because you have to remember the writers of it. Shane Black was one of the writers.
Yeah.
And he did Lethal Weapon, like.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a lot in it that was... you know, very deftly done by Fred Decker, who's the director. And because they didn't have the massive budgets to do all this kind of, you know, late 80s action movie stuff, like explosions and this and that, they did concentrate a lot on the characters.
Yeah.
And there was loads of, like, subtle stuff, like Sean's mom and dad. Like, Sean's dad is a policeman.
Yeah, Del.
Del. And the whole thing between his mom and dad, like their marriage is breaking down, and, you know, she had bags in the hall ready to leave and stuff like that, but it's not, like, explicitly explained, but you could say that maybe Sean is focusing so much on monsters and he's really bad at his schoolwork because of his home life and
he's
because of the,
into that
yeah
world.
The volatility he's retreating into that world. And the whole thing could be said to be, this is a bit wanky, but it could be said to be like a whole metaphor for Sean having to fight his demons to distract him from what's happening at home.
Exactly, yeah. And then there's a scene where he's sitting on the roof of his house, and from the roof of his house, he can see the drive-in movie.
Yeah.
So no kid's going to crawl out onto the roof just because. So you'd imagine that maybe he climbed out onto the roof because they were arguing to get away from the yelling.
Yeah.
And he saw there was a movie on. You tune into the frequency of the drive-in movie on a radio, so he had that going as well. So you just sit up there with a pair of binoculars and just be lost in the movie. So he immersed himself in all these kind of schlocky horror films of the 80s. And he wouldn't know if it was sort of spoke more about sort of, say, Shane Black or Fred Decker, the two guys who wrote it, their relationship with movies, and that maybe they escaped into that world.
As well.
And that maybe the character of Sean is themselves.
As did all of us, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting into comic books, getting into computer games. Like, I'm doing this because, you know, I can't talk to people in real life.
Yeah.
So I live vicariously through this stuff, you know.
His world then becomes real.
Yeah.
You know, the monsters are real.
Yeah.
And it, he kind of segues into it so well.
Yeah.
For a hero to be like, yeah, the monsters, like, oh shit, they're real. At no point does he kind of go, oh fuck, I didn't know. He was like, yeah, I fully expected
this is my moment. I've been preparing for this moment. Yeah, that's the whole point of it. That it's like, he says often, he goes like, there's monsters taking over my town and nobody believes me. Like, reported to the police, and they were ringing the fucking police, and like a lazy, you know, fat black quintessential cop, like, is like the typical, like, hello? And it's all like, can you help us? No, monsters, fuck you. Like, shiklacky, hanging up the phone. Like, he doesn't give a fuck, you know?
And even then later on, when the werewolf character, who I think is a great character.
Yeah, really good.
I like the representation.
So, someone with very little lines, and that's another one of my favourite plot points in the movie. It's a Rudy and werewolf moment. But, like, that actor had such a deep backstory, it seems, when he was... he turned himself into the police, right?
Yeah. Turns out into the police, says, lock me up, I want to be locked up, I'm going to be a werewolf. And they're not taking him seriously, even though he's ranting and raving.
He's crazy!
Yeah, he's like, get this crazy guy. Like, you're going to section him. You think if he just went in and said, I did a murder, or punch a police officer, he would have went in. But he was manic. I mean, what do you expect?
And he wrecked the whole gaff.
Wrecked the gaff, throwing people through windows and stuff. And he pulled a gun and screams, lock me up! And one guy shoots him a few times in the chest, and down he goes.
And he gets put into the morgue.
Yeah.
And then when the moon shines on him, then the bullets bang, ping, ping,
because you can't kill a werewolf with this anything other than a silver bullet.
And then he turned into a werewolf and he went on a rampage.
He was just such a reluctant werewolf, such a reluctant monster.
He's like, I don't want this to happen. Like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of. I don't want this to happen to me. So one of my favorite points in the movie, like as Rudy is like hopping stakes into these vampiresses.
Yeah.
The first one goes in, it's like funk, and she hits the ground like a fucking bag of dirt, and he's like, oh, like you can see, like, fuck, this shit is real. And he goes to get another one while still trying to maintain the coolness.
Yeah.
But he starts to shit himself a little bit. And you can see in the way the fag kind of falls out of his mouth, and your wand gets a little bit close, and he's like, oh fuck, oh fuck. And instead of like firing it with the bow and arrow, he gets it and does it with his hand. And he's like, this is fucking too real, man. And just that whole thing of Rudy's like self-image or his self-esteem. Like, I'm cool Rudy. I fucking have like white socks and black shoes like Michael Jackson.
And nothing affects me.
Yeah, and I'm
he was dressed like exactly like Michael Jackson.
It was, in bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird, like. And he comes out and he's that, I'm the old kid, I'm here and I'm helping everybody and I'm fucking deadly and all. And then he gets faced with his own mortality. He's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So the bit with the werewolf, and this is a spoiler, but like, you know what's going to happen. The bit with the werewolf when Rudy then, there's a montage in the middle of his class where it's all like, we're going to make the weapons to kill all the monsters. We got to melt silver bullets. And he gets like, he fucking gets
all the Sean's spoons, mother's
the silverware, and melts it down and makes a bunch of bullets, right? I don't know how you can make how you can make a silver bullet where you put it into a case and it has like a firing cap and all this.
The bullets, like, he makes aren't he spills them all out and they're like full bullets.
Like,
but they're completely silver.
A whole chunk of just silver. And it's like, when the hammer comes down, how does that like propel the...
Exactly,
anyway. But he has a silver bullet. And the werewolf is in front of him and he's after ripping lads apart. He's after getting blown up with a fucking piece of dynamite.
Yeah.
And the werewolf goes everywhere. And
this is a throwback to a conversation he had previously when they were saying, how'd you kill a werewolf?
You can't kill him with anything other than
a car
silver.
Crash or you can choke him to death. It's like, no, a silver bullet.
This is it. And the werewolf stands in front of him. He's like, ah! And Rudy looks at the werewolf and he says, bang! And then pulls the trigger. But he surprises himself. Like, you'd see... He does lose the veneer of cool.
Yeah.
Which is so humanizing. And it's not like this, like, disparate fucking hero that's like, I'm cool no matter what.
Yeah, like, it's like those 1980s heroes, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator, when he throws the knife into the guy and says, stick around.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like that. Like, I've killed the guy and now I'm really glib about it.
Yeah.
He sort of tries to be glib before it. And afterwards, he's like, oh, fuck, I just shot a guy.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I hope nobody saw.
That's the thing. It's such a refreshing, like, weird angle to have on it. And I haven't seen any, like, there's very few movies that have that.
Yeah, he's like an anti-hero.
Yeah.
In a way, because he is the bad boy. But at the same time, when he does something heroic, he's like,
oh, fuck.
I feel bad. It weighs on him.
Yeah,
maybe that's why he didn't do any more movies.
Like, yeah, it's like,
you know?
Oh, fuck, I killed, like, three bitches and one werewolf guy.
Yeah.
But the magic part that he's like, bang, boom, and he pulls the trigger and the gun, and the werewolf hits the ground. and then he turns back into a human and he reaches out and he has like blood in his hand and he looks at Rudy and he's like, thank you. And then he dies and you're like, oh man, fuck. The emotions, the feels.
And just the way he says thank you as well. It's not like, thank you. He says it and he sort of goes up at the end like he had more to say.
Yeah.
It's just something always stuck with me because he kind of goes, thank you. Like that.
Yeah.
Like he wants to say like, thank you, the fucking savior of my life. I really, it was just, you know, something he couldn't do or wouldn't do himself.
You've stopped my suffering and, you know, it's,
you know, but it was just
really good moments.
There's those little tiny little, and there's a little acting choice that like Fred Dekker gives to Andre Gower, who plays Sean. At the end, he has to deliver the line, the final line in the movie.
Yeah. The Clint Eastwood
line, and he says, you know, how will I do it? And he didn't want it to be cheesy. He said, just do it the way Clint would.
Yeah.
So, like, the army shows up and they're like, what's going on here? Who are you guys? He turns around and says, we're the Monster Squad.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's the boom. That's the kick at the end of the movie. But it could have been really cheesy. You know what I mean?
I think it landed really well, yeah. Andre Gower, who played the lead character, who's now 44, he had a pretty lackluster career after like a movie like that we see as that's a fucking brilliant movie, but like at the time it was a big duck egg, and he'd been in like a couple of like smaller ones and been on TV and stuff like that, but his acting in the movie as a leader, I think he was a natural leader, absolutely. And his mate Patrick then, who was in a few things like Children of the Corn, played by Robbie Keegar, He didn't do anything after 1990. So this movie, I think, killed the careers of a lot of these actors because it was such a fucking poop fest in 1987. Like, it was only in the cinema for 2 weeks. Like, it bombed like an Ariana Grande concert. Like, it was done, right? And it only made $3.7 million of its $15 million budget.
Yeah.
And
that's depressing. But now it's a cult hit now. But I suppose
20 years later, now exactly
to be a cult hit.
So they're all going around to all these like comic cons and stuff, and doing all these Monster Squad appearances and getting a few bob, I guess. But like,
but if you look at
Ryan Lambert is like, man, I've abandoned all. I don't need to be doing this shit. It's like, we give you a few bob if you show up. All right, will I have to wear the glasses? Yeah, okay.
I'm in the
goddamn club, aren't I? but that's it. Like, it seems just so.
But even if you look at some of the 80s dry, kids,
like, yeah.
Stars, even in the likes of E.T. I mean, the kid in E.T. Elliot, he disappeared for a while after.
Disappeared,
that. And I didn't see him. Same or hear
as,
about
same as Fred again Savage from Wonder Years.
Yeah,
he went behind the camera instead, like, and you know, started directing Always Sunny in Philadelphia and stuff like that. Yeah. Arrested Development,
and he was in Goldmember.
Oh yeah,
and truly terrible film, but
really so bad.
Two good things in it though: Tight Like a Tiger. And crepe and a pancake and a schmuck. But he disappeared. Your one, her name escapes
Phoebe.
Me. No, in E.T.
Oh,
she's in Charlie's Angels.
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore. She was in that. That was a big success. And she disappeared. And then she re-emerged as well. Yeah. So it seems like it was a thing in the 80s. Like the movie, like even E.T., even the kids in the Goonies, for the most part.
For the most part.
They all disappeared.
Yeah. You know? Sean Astin. Maybe stuck around.
Yeah, and what's his face? Corey
Feldman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the rest of them sort of, it didn't really do much for them.
Like, if you got one bad film, you were done.
Yeah.
Kind of. But sure, I mean, it's not a whole lot different now, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking about E.T., like, Fred Dekker put a load of nice little Easter eggs into the movie, and you can see, if you're into monster films, you'll see a load of, like, homages to these old monster movies, like when they meet Frankenstein, who ends up being a very positive character in the movie. So like the basic thing is, like, Dracula comes back and he's like, I want to take over the world. There's an amulet that I need to get, and
Dr. It's concentrated good, but on one night every 100 years it can be broken,
and if it breaks, then the good in the world ends up becoming less, and evil can take over,
and he can plunge the world into darkness.
So Dracula comes back, he's hiding out, I don't know where. He starts off on a plane, his coffin falls out of a plane, and he just starts gathering up all these dudes. It's kind of inexplicable, and it's kind of a MacGuffin, like you have to disassociate your disbelief and go like, okay, look, just get into it. Like, right, there's monsters for no reason, but like, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say no reason, because the Van Helsing and his crew departed from, well, not Van Helsing, but his crew, because Van Helsing gets swept up in a vortex.
A
ball of vortex. That's, I think, the exact same vortex from The Evil Dead. But his crew takes the amulet and his journal over to America, and that's where he hide it there, and that's why the journal is there and the amulet is there. Dracula, having escaped all that shit in Eastern Europe, decides to go to America to be around here for this 100th anniversary of this amulet to break it. That's why he shows up, because on the scene on the plane...
He's being flown across, actually, in a...
It's not him. That's Frankenstein.
He's on the plane as well.
As a bat. I don't think he's in the coffin. I think that's Frankenstein's box. And he caused the plane to crash, and then the box lands... Because he's...
Is that not his coffin?
I don't think it's Frankenstein. Why else would it appear out of the river, Louisiana?
I thought it was him.
No, he shows up because Frankenstein's getting transported.
So he comes out of nowhere and just goes, I'm just going to bomb... It's a World War II plane that's being transported from Europe to America.
With Frankenstein on board.
But it's like a museum piece or whatever.
Yeah. Flown by Tony Soprano's sister's ex-husband, which is just weird. But then he drops Frankenstein... out of the plane, and he lands in the swamp where they call him Gilman because he didn't have the credits to call him the Creature from the Black Lagoon. So he appears and brings Frankie with him. Then the mummy shows up because there's an exhibit in town. And you wouldn't know, because Dracula was pulling the scenes. He had a hearse ready to go. He had everything ready to go. He could
with a cool fucking hood ornament as a skull. And you see that car, and it comes out of nowhere, and then it disappears. And you don't see it again. You're like, where's the cunt's car?
He drives it on rental.
He drives it across to your man's house and parks it in the front garden, but that's it. Like a deadly car.
Was it not dynamited then? No, the other guy's car was dynamite.
Where did he get that awesome Dracula car?
Where'd he get the Dracula costume?
This is it.
But so I'd say Dracula was pulling strings behind the scenes to make sure that there was going to be, the Wolfman was going to be there and compliant, to make sure that Gilman was ready to go, to make sure Frankenstein was going to be delivered, to make sure the mummy exhibit was happening as well.
Yeah.
Or perhaps even his presence was enough to activate the mummy. So I wouldn't say it was all just random chance. All these monsters just happened to descend here at this point.
He sent a WhatsApp group message. Yeah. And he's just like, hey guys, get ready. There was a couple of little different changes to each character as well because of copyright budget. So you said the Gilman couldn't be the Creature from the Blue Lagoon.
He had to have his flaps in a different position.
Yeah.
The head shape was different. And the same with the werewolf.
The chest adornments and all this stuff.
Yeah.
The werewolf had to look more lupine.
Yeah.
Couldn't have a man face. And Frankenstein, Dracula is Bram Stoker intellectual property, and Frankenstein is the Shelley family property. So they couldn't have that thing. So for Frankenstein, they had the bolts, the neck bolts that are traditionally on the neck, up on his forehead.
Which I think work better.
Yeah.
Makes more sense.
Because it's that's where the brain is, right?
Because when you're getting electroconvulsive therapy, that's where you put it. They don't put it on your neck.
On your temples.
You know?
So that was enough then to say it's our own creation. Yeah. And then the Dracula hairline, which is, if you've ever watched The Monsters, Little Eddie Monster has that kind of point down the middle of his forehead.
It's the Bela Lugosi widow's peak.
Yeah, that was the quintessential... I've said quintessential four times in the show now, so I'm going to have to get a new word.
Welcome to those quintessential guys.
And so the widow's peak, the little point and all, that was taken away, and he just had normal hair or whatever.
Still had the teeth though.
Yeah, he still had the teeth. He still had the collar and the cape and the red velvet and all that. Grandpa Munster outfit. Yeah, so I mean, how far away from... copyrighted intellectual property do you have to get,
Well, I think those monsters sort of more or less sort of... public domain, in a way.
There were property of Universal.
I think the actual look was Universal's property. But as you say, I think Frankenstein, Dracula were properties of... So Stoker would say, not Stoker himself. He just comes out of his coffin.
Yeah.
Says, you can have Dracula. You can use the name Dracula, walk away. But Universal was saying you can't have him look like Air Dracula.
Yes, that's
so that
the
was
thing.
Where the stuff was there.
Did you know that Liam Neeson nearly got the... role of Dracula,
and that would have been awesome.
Can you imagine that?
He would have won. It would have been. I've got a particular set of skills.
I'm gonna bite your neck, and I'm gonna suck the blood out of your body, and it's gonna give me life, but it's gonna kill you. You're like
really remorseful.
Jesus, Liam. He's like, I've a particular set of teeth.
Nice.
But that's the thing. Imagine Liam Neeson, a young Liam Neeson, being that. It'd be fucking scary as shit, man.
That would be, because he is, he was Darkman.
Yeah.
And he was the ghost in High Spirits.
The guy...
And he was kind of terrifying that, because he looks odd because of his big slant and slope of a nose.
The guy that played him, Duncan Rieger, who's pretty like pretty scary. He was in a load of TV shows. He's in Star Trek and Zorro, the TV show, and loads of TV movies. But he was like an Olympic boxer, and he was a figure skater, and he was like super fit. So he's just
he had twisted steel and sex appeal.
Yeah,
and he was a scary fucker. And do you read about what he was doing backstage? Behind the scenes.
Being Dracula the whole time.
He was Dracula the whole time. Frankenstein was Frankenstein the whole time. I'd only talking grunts. But
Tom Noonan played Frankenstein. Yeah. He was like method.
And he went on to play the fucking the slasher in Last Action Hero.
Yeah. And
which was also directed by and also written by Shane Black.
Yeah, he's in loads of stuff. Yeah. He's in Louis, he's in The Blacklist, and he was in Synecdoche, New York as the old helper guy as well.
Yeah, and he's the guy in the wheelchair in Heat that gives them like the $4 million payoff for stealing some coins.
He's in loads of stuff.
He's a good character. He kind of just blends in, but he's a weird looking, but he blends in a way. Was he in Manhunt as well?
I don't know. He's like that guy from The Hills Have Eyes. You know, you just they lob him in there when they need
Berryman,
someone.
Is it?
Yeah, when they need someone with a weird face, they just lob that fella in there.
Need someone about 6'7" with no hair, you know, they'll do it. Yeah. But the Dracula guy, what he would do backstage is he wouldn't let the little girl, Phoebe, wouldn't let Phoebe,
played by Ashley Bank,
wouldn't let her see him with his teeth or his contact lenses. He had to wear red contacts. So he'd be like, whatever, but he wouldn't have the teeth or anything, because later on he picks her up and he flashes the teeth and the eyes. And she even says that the scream that she does in the movie is for real, because it's the first time she's seen him like that. And she's only like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
But it is quite scary.
Shite yourself.
And that line, "Give me the amulet, you bitch." Remember watching that going, "Huh, is that the same bitch to a child? Yeah, they do that."
That's really bad. But
it was kind of real. It seemed like it was skirting on the edge of of not acceptable for a kid to be watching. And I think it just kind of skirted that lovely balance that you could probably watch this with like an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
And he'd still be like, "Oh.
Oh, look what he said."
Yeah.
He said B.
Yeah.
But there was loads of curse words that said like fucking shit. And like even Phoebe is like, "Come over here and meet Frankenstein. Don't be such a chicken shit."
Yeah.
And says it like straight away. And I think it gave that authenticity, because when we were kids, we were all like, feck. Feck in hell. Yeah. Carson was, you know, part of it. But as you got older, if you're like 10, 11, 12, 13, like these guys, you'd be all like, "Fuck that dick cocksucker." Yeah. Like you'd say that shit. And in the Goonies or in any of those things, like they'd say those words, but in like Mighty Ducks it seemed disingenuous, because they weren't going, "You fucking fat bastard, will you fucking pass the fucking puck?"
Yeah.
You know?
It was, and that's a testament to
Sports Talk.
Shane Black and Decker, who wrote
Locker Room Talk.
They were able to write sort of like, let's say, adult dialogue for the kids. They didn't dumb it down.
Yeah, exactly.
They weren't written like kids. They were just, because when they're having discussions, because I suppose like a child would only talk like a child if they don't know what they're talking about. But if you've ever talked to like a 6-year-old about like Paw Patrol, they'll know it in and out.
Yeah.
They'll know everything
Every
about
bit of it.
And the confidence that comes across, like even my 2-year-old at home is watching Paw Patrol, and he's like, I mess with him and say, "Oh, is that such a pup?" And he's like, "No, that's this other puppy. He drives that. What are you
Come
even
on,
talking
Dad.
About? But he's just Dope. So confident, because he knows what he's talking about. And in the Monster Squad, the kids know
My
monsters.
Nephew was like that. He was like that with dinosaurs when he was into dinosaurs. He's like, that's called a Trilophopacosaurus. You dope." Like, real condescending.
You're sobbing.
Like, condescending. They're like, good knowledge.
Yeah.
Nick's the attitude, bro.
It's kids for you, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You can't. What are you going to do? But they know this monster stuff. They know that stuff. But the panic in some of them when they were like, "Come on, cut the shit." Like they'd talk as if real kids would talk to each other, rather than going, "Hey man, you're being a real jerk.
Yeah, you're such a duty head."
Yeah. That kind of shit like sickens my craw when I fucking...
Because kids will talk more like adults when they're
alone.
Together.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? So some of the other favorite moments in the movie come from Fat Kid.
And yes.
I can really identify with this guy, Horace. Fat Kid was one of these characters like Chunk from the Goonies, or you know, like the goalie. What was the goalie's
Goldberg.
Name? Goldberg, yeah, from Mighty Ducks, where he's like comic relief, but he's also the butt of the jokes, but he also has like a real strong sense of identity, even though he's being bullied. And it's kind of, he skirts that like a dichotomy of like victimhood and then like heroism.
Yeah.
And there's a real wide character arc for Horace. And he starts off getting bullied by EJ,
Wayne
from the Wonder Years. And towards the end of the movie, like one of the greatest parts in it is when he finally gets his guts, you know?
Yeah.
And he has a shotgun and the Gill Man is attacking people and he just goes, "Ch-ch-ch." And the bullies that were bullying him were in a shop and they'd locked up the shop. And Horace was coming over going, let me in, they're attacking, let me in. And the bullies were like, no fucking way, man. You're not going to bring this shit in here. And he's like, fuck you guys.
Yeah. You know? And it was kind of reminiscent of Ghostbusters when Rick Moranis' character is banging on the window, guys, let me in, anybody? And he turns around and Zool is upon him and he's just, that's me, just down the window and gone. But it sort of echoed that scene where Horace is like, let me in. And you think this could be the end for him.
Yeah.
But then he kind of goes, no, fuck that.
You know what? I'm taking control of this shit. Yeah. And he gets the policeman's shotgun, the dead police, and he says, shotgun, cocks it and fucking blows a hole in the gill, man. And then he turns around and the bullies are like, oh my God. And they come out the door and they're like, holy fucking shit, fat kid.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Yeah, fat kid, you did it really well. And he just cocks the thing and they're calling him like fat kid. Everyone
calls him fat kid.
The whole movie is called fat kid. And he's like, yeah, fat kid. And he just goes, my name is Horace. And you're just like, yeah, fat kid, good for you.
Yeah.
Or Horace, I mean.
Yeah. But it just kind of shows that like you back a victim, we'll say, or somebody you perceive to be a victim, back them into a corner.
Yeah.
They're going to turn on you.
Yeah.
So it just, poor Horace had School Shooter written all over him.
Yeah, I know.
But
didn't
just
he?
Bang. And it was like it, but like Rudy took down the three vampire mutts and Wolfman.
Yeah.
And Horace took down Gilman solo.
Yeah, so the whole point of the movie is that they have to get this amulet and they have to say like some German words from Van Helsing's diary into the amulet, and it turns it into like a vortex that can suck up all the evil, and then you throw all the, you know, the Draculas and the Gilmen and the werewolves into this vortex, and it goes into limbo, which was invented by, you know, the Vatican to make money. So it's not a real thing.
Yeah.
It's a totally fake thing. Look it up. And or you can go on thoseconspiracyguys.com and check it out. We did a Vatican episode about how it's a fucking money-making scheme to make guilty mothers of stillborn children pay money to the fucking church.
It's a tax on grief.
So, they go into limbo, and that's where they stay. And Van Helsing has been there for a couple of hundred years. Dracula was going around, making the payments off that cool hearse that he has. And they have to like say this. You have to be a virgin, and you have to say the stuff into the.
You have to be female.
You have to be female for some reason, because you know. And you say the stuff into the amulet, and then you throw it in the air, and it turns into a vortex and sucks up all the stuff. So the whole point then is that they have to like. Rudy has a picture. Took an accidental picture of Patrick's sister topless,
which we don't get to see, but I'm sure there's a DVD extra raging. Somewhere.
And he basically blackmails her and says, you fucking have to do it or I'm going to put this up on the board in school. Which is a bit of a dick move from Rudy.
Yeah, but it gets the job done.
Exactly.
He's the guy who gets shit done.
He does feel a little bit guilty about it too.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, you got to do it. And then he kind of looks away like, oh, okay. You know? It was just, his fucking character is really, it's really consistent.
It's like fucking, he's like a young Jack Bauer in a way. Yeah. It's like, just shit needs to be
done.
Got to
get it done.
This is the way it is.
Exactly.
You know?
And he basically gets her to come along, and they meet this guy, and they're not the greatest for making up names, so they met this guy called Scary German Guy.
Yeah.
And Scary German Guy lives in a house up the road, and, I know what the real monsters are. And he closes the door, and you get to see a Holocaust tattoo on his arm, and you're like, oh shit, and then they never address it again. Yeah. They never fucking talk about it again.
But it's just so layered, and it's sort of, in a way, in the 80s, they kind of said, any kid that watches kind of like, yeah, there's probably old people. Yeah, they're probably a little bit themselves. They might have a German accent. They're not necessarily fucking Nazis, though. So it just seemed like it might have been like a little thing of the day, sort of like, don't be picking on older people.
Yeah, they might.
For being Nazi war criminals.
They've lived a life.
You know, but it kind of layered. Everybody
like that
seems
movie,
to have
Apt Pupil with David Schwimmer and
Matthew Perry.
No.
Could I be more of a Nazi?
Ian McKellen, he played this old Nazi, and there was a kid who found out who he was, and he blackmailed him into telling them all the, like, it was like fucking violence porn. He was like, tell me all the stuff you used to do in the concentration camps. Oh, yeah, Eddie. Like,
and when did you develop powers of magnetism?
And, so Rudy ends up getting your wand to read the thing, so they meet this old scary German guy, and he helps them to translate the Van Helsing diary, and he's like, every 100 years... The amulet can be destroyed, and it is tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And you're like, and we just came to you today and it's tomorrow night, you fucking coincidental old German motherfucker.
I think the book he was reading from was called Exposition 101.
And it just ended up being really convenient. And the whole movie takes place over 48 hours.
Yeah.
And on the night, they're standing in the car park in the middle of somewhere near a church that they couldn't get into because they wanted to get the holy ground.
Yeah.
And they're whispering all this German stuff into the amulet. And your one reads it. Another favorite part of the movie, your one reads it and it gets to the end. And he goes, "Where's the vortex?" And your one's like, "Yeah, we need a virgin to read it." And he goes, "You're not a virgin, are you?" And she's like, "No." And he goes, "What?" And the little brother is like, "Come on, read the fucking thing." Like, yeah, he's getting really frustrated. And she's like, "Well, Steve doesn't count." And the old German guy is like, "If you have a dick inside you at any yeah. point," he doesn't say that.
The next 25 minutes is just him describing sex with his dried fingers.
"You put it in and you just lick the top."
Yeah.
And because I have no foreskin, tattoo on the arm, you know, it's continuity. And it just ends up being like, they have to get the little kid, Phoebe, to go, "Is she a virgin?"
Yeah.
Says Eugene. And they get Phoebe to read it.
And the old German guy says, "Unfortunately." So it was a cutscene.
15 minutes ago, yes. But I thought I was going to be killed by a bunch of monsters. So, you know, free for all.
Yeah. Try it once.
Yeah.
So
she has to read out the stuff and she has the amulet. And then, as you said, then Dracula comes over while she's after reading out the thing. And he's like, "Give me the amulet, you bitch." And basically just like,
it's terrifying.
Very scary. But the whole point of it is that they're trying to get into Dracula's house to get where the amulet is. And the reason he's living in that house is because in the basement, they have the amulet buried.
Yeah.
And the house is 666 Shadowbrook Road. So it's a real scary address already, right?
Who named this place?
Exactly. And he had a bunch of women locked up in the basement that turned into the vampiresses and stuff like that. And it ended up being some of the best action scenes in that movie were the lads trying to break into the house and like where the werewolf jumps out and they're like, "Kick him in the nards, kick him in the nards." It's like, "Wolfman's got nards," which ends up being like the typical, like the most famous sentence in the whole movie is like, "Wolfman's got nards," which is quite cool, from Horace. Now, Horace, as a character, really good, very strong.
Yeah.
You know, the shotgun thing and all. On him. He died. That actor died age 22 from pneumonia in Las Vegas. Can you imagine?
That's depressing.
Poor devil. He was in a couple of episodes of Quantum Leap as well. And he was in one other movie 2 years previous to Monster Squad called Moving Violations about a traffic school. But that was it then. He didn't really make anything after that and died of pneumonia. Like, you're like, oh, that's really sad.
It is depressing. Like, an awful lot of people from a movie that like... Like, if you watch the movie and know nothing about it, you kind of go, that's a great movie. But the more you read, it kind of takes on a tragic tinge in a way.
Yeah, it failed at the cinema. Like, a lot of people didn't work afterwards. It kind of ruined a lot of people's, not ruined their careers, but, like, didn't propel them as much as, like, you know, look at the people that were all in, you know, Josh Brolin and Sean Astin who were in Goonies. Like, it's kind of the antithesis of that. And at the same, like, released at the same time and had the same, you know, it just didn't hit that mark. And at the time it was critically panned because it was like, oh yeah, you've taken the, you know, the young teen adventure movie and all the classic horror movies and made a shit version of both.
Yeah.
And now you look at it and go, this is brilliant. This is brilliant crack.
It is. And it pops and it fizzles.
It does. There are a couple of Easter eggs in the movie. As you watch it, you can keep an eye out. Fred Decker, who had planned to make more movies after this, but didn't really make, he didn't get to do them all because obviously this one laid a big duck egg.
Yeah.
But in the movie he made before Monster Squad called Night of the Creeps, he left a Go Monster Squad sign that was painted on the wall of one of the scenes in that movie, knowing that the next year he was going to be making that Monster Squad movie. And in Eugene's room, there's a scene where Eugene calls his dad and goes like, "Dad, there's something, there's a monster in my closet." And he opens the closet and there's a mummy in there or whatever. Yeah. So on the wall in Eugene's room, there's a poster for Johnny Quest, which was the next movie Decker was going to make. But because of the fact that Monster Squad fucked up and didn't make any money, it never got funding for that film and ended up getting fucked out, which is unfortunate.
Well, yeah, that's unfair.
But if you're watching really closely, you can see all those little Easter eggs. Have you got any other favorite plot points around that you can remember that you, for people to watch out? Kick him in the nards.
Kick him in the nards is great. Dispatching the mummy.
Yeah.
Is great. And oh, that's the Rudy chasing. Again.
Yeah, really good. Rudy again got rid of a lot of monsters, man.
He did an awful lot of shit. I don't think he needed the lads.
Patrick, I didn't think did a lot. Only like look cool.
Yeah.
So we have another section in White Press Play that we'll do at the end of the show. After talking about all the characters and all their foibles and all their positivity, we do an alternate casting. So if we had other people to play the parts in those movies, who do you think could be as good?
Is it back then in the 80s?
I think you can have it from any time. If you were to remake it or if you were to... Like, I have a couple, but they're from that time.
Yeah.
But you can have it from nowadays if you want.
Jesus. So I probably would like to see Liam Neeson as Dracula. Just,
yeah, that would be class.
Just thinking about it. Let me see. Rudy. I'd like to leave Rudy where it was, but if I had to recast Rudy, I would say John Cusack.
That's a god one.
80s era John Cusack. I think you just give it a nice thing. If not, then maybe Judd Nelson. I don't know. Judd Nelson.
I was just going to say from The Breakfast
Club. He's too big or meaty.
He is too, yeah. He's nose is too big. I think... I would have picked either young Kiefer Sutherland, like Stand By Me Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
Or an older River Phoenix.
Yeah.
Like some, it has to have that 80s like smack of like, and also a little bit of tragedy.
Yes.
Because like, because he's not in loads of stuff afterwards, that's his like, his seminal role. That's his
Citizen Kane.
Yeah. You know, he wasn't in that and else to poison it afterwards. Like you look at, Stand By Me and the bully character that Kiefer Sutherland played, and you're like, yeah, but you were also like in loads of other stuff, and you're Jack Bauer
Young
and
Guns.
You're Young Guns too. Like Gun Harder. But it was, what that's going to happen in this show as well, just
Young Guns too. Guns Younger.
And it ended up like, you know, colouring your past performances or whatever.
I think
if you had somebody like River Phoenix who did it and then died, you'd be like, whopper.
Yeah, nice.
Because it has that, there's some kind of a bang of tragedy off of this when you watch this film. Like, knowing the context behind it when you're watching it and takes it out of the realm of being just a shit monster movie into being...
This guy died for it.
Yeah, something way
better.
The
Dark Knight. I think if Heath Ledger hadn't died, may not have been held up in high esteem.
Exactly.
Great movie, favourite of the three, but... I think that if he hadn't popped his clogs, then people would have been like, that was great. I hope he comes back. What's going to be up the next show? But the fact that he's gone is like, we'll never get that again.
Yeah, it's never going to happen.
It's like a fucking, it's like a cross-dressing unicorn, you know?
There's no real spoilers in this movie. There's nothing that happens that you don't really know about. We concentrate a lot at the end. There's some weird things in it, like why do the monsters gather together? Where does Dracula's car go? From a really poorly... written note from Eugene, who's like a 7-year-old or whatever. Yeah. He writes it in crayon and sends it to the army
men.
And then a fucking load of army people show up at the end when the
like
fight
the
is
National
over.
Guard.
Yeah, and you're like, really? Would you really do that for a child's letter? Like nowadays political climate, you absolutely wouldn't.
Yeah.
So unless it was written in Arabic. But I think that there was a lot of great characters in this, a lot of great character arcs, and consistency, which is very rare in those kind of 80s kind of teen pop movies.
It's a movie you can watch as an adult or as a child or with your children and still get the same level of enjoyment.
Yeah.
There's extra things in
Like we watched Robin Hood Men in Tights with 2 9-year-old boys that are nephews of ours, right? And they fucking loved it, man. Like the little titty jokes and all, the blind guy reading, feeling the playboy, the braille playboy, and he's all like, oh, or Robin comes back and he's all like, oh, Robin, you've got nice boobs, and they're fucking baiting themselves to laugh. So like the curses and the little titillations, or Wolfman's got nards, or something like that. Like shit, someone saying shit from a 9-year-old, and you're watching it in the company of Alice, you're like, oh, like it would be great to watch with kids.
Yeah.
Do you know? Unless they're one of these kids that was raised on a screen and they're all like, pew, pew, and you have to have fucking, you know, Michael Bay type effects in real life for to make them pay attention to anything. But, so the final part then for this type of show, we're going to be talking about movies from now on the show for the time being. We'll also go into, like, directorial, like, filmography inspections and dialectics. And also talk about like actors' filmographies and the stuff that they do. And we will be talking about TV shows, sometimes by season, sometimes by episode, sometimes just by genre. Loads of different types. But the mainstay of White Press Play is going to be movie recommendations, just like this show. This one ran a little bit long because it's one of the first. But it was just explaining the stuff at the start and all that stuff. To be around between 40 and 60 minutes. I think we should keep it as a rule that like the show definitely shouldn't be longer than the movie.
No,
right?
Yeah, that'll be...
Yeah, so that's not going to happen. So one of the final pieces then for the Why Press Play movie show is One Reason Why. So we have to pick one reason why. If somebody was to say, why should I watch Monster Squad from Steve, one reason why you should watch it.
It's a fun horror film that isn't too scary that you can watch with your kids.
Yeah, and it's not like a sensory overload.
Yeah, there's no tits. There's no sex. There's a little bit of tits, but you don't really see them. There's no extreme violence. And I think everything that happens in it is sort of sanitized. Now, fair enough, Wolfman gets blown to bits, but at the same time, it's a Wolfman and it doesn't really look like a human. So I think it's something you can probably watch with like an 8-year-old and they'll be like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And you can watch it and go, that's good action, good jokes. Good storyline, good characterization.
It has that kind of Simpsons kind of duplex comedy where there's like the level for kids and then there's a couple of like zingers for the adults that the kids
and
don't get and stuff.
The great thing about Monster Squad is if you have some little millennial telling you that Stranger Things is the pièce de résistance of kids' horror action, you can say, no. And you can take them back to 1987 and show them the Monster Squad and tell them to shut the fuck up.
Exactly.
Because...
Watch that and fucking...
Stranger Things had to have looked at Monster Squad and said, this would be fucking great. And the Duffer Brothers took it, modernized it, changed it.
I think those guys are taking like Stand By Me and stuff like Monster Squad and
Goonies, Ghostbusters, Poltergeist.
Exactly. Loads and loads and loads of... And there's homages to the whole lot in the show, you know. And I think season two of Stranger Things is going to bring us a lot more kind of cap tips to... tips of the cap to other movies and TV from their time. Even like the titles and stuff like that coming in. Like it's all 80s stuff. And it's supposed to cast you back to that time. And this was like peak, you know, pre-teen cool gang movie time.
Yeah,
this
there's no all pretense
in
this movie. Everything that's cool in it is cool because it's cool. And it's not like Transformers where somebody's shown up in a fancy car and cool special effects and all that.
Yeah.
Everything in it is like the monsters that are in it, they're actual outfits. And the poor Gill man got an awful leathering in his outfit.
Got
but they're actual lads in suits.
So your one reason why is you can watch it with a kid of 8 or 9 and have them enjoy it as much as you did when you were watching it.
Exactly.
At 8 or 9.
It's a family, it's a perfect family horror movie for Halloween.
For a bit of crack.
Or any time. Cool. And if your kids like Stranger Things and they're looking for something else in between season 1 and 2.
This is the real deal. That's the one. My one reason why is from all of these like quote unquote shitty 80s movies, this one actually has like quality, has quality of character, quality of writing, and the characters are consistent. And, you know, it all happens so quickly. The cuts are fucking super fast. There's one cut like where, you know, there's a whole setup in a diner and I think it's like 4 seconds, but they have like 40 extras in the whole diner and Rudy's eating some chips and they come in and they go, hey, Rudy, do you know a virgin? And it just cuts and you're like, man, that whole setup just for that one thing, you'd know that it wasn't a director's cut. That, like, Decker had this whole big thing planned out and there was extra bits written and it was kind of all cut out for taste at the time. Like, the characters are really well done and very consistent. And if you like a good kind of hero story, I think Rudy is the star of the show in this movie. One reason why you should watch Monster Squad is definitely for Rudy and his... His performance,
yeah,
absolutely.
You'd be going around on a BMX with something akin to a mullet.
Like matches off your heels. And
yeah, it's kind of, if I had to pitch it, I would say it's like Lost Boys, but for boys.
Yeah,
I
love it.
You know?
Yeah, we will do Lost Boys as well. So that's it for White Press Play for this time. That's Monster Squad, 1987. If you're looking for it online, I don't know if it's on Netflix. We're not going to be giving recommendations of where to get it, obviously for legal reasons. For download and stuff, but it's out there.
Yeah,
you will
get
it.
It's not on Netflix.
It's not. It's hard to find. So I'd just like to say thanks to Steve for joining me.
Thanks for having me
on this one of the first episodes of White Press Play ever. We hope you enjoyed it too. Please be in touch. Get online. Get talking to us. Tell us your favorite parts of Monster Squad. We're going to be throwing up some memes and stuff like that, and definitely a couple of clips of our favorite bits. Like I'm in the goddamn club, aren't I? And you know, trying to throw up a few bits of. you know, like trivia and stuff like that in a couple of little pictures and memes and try and make it a bit interactive. If you are watching it for the first time or you're watching it with kids, please let us know how it went. What did they say? Did they laugh? Did they enjoy it? And if you have watched it already, let us know your favorite bits. Are there any questions, weird things? There's fucking loads of like set inconsistencies and like, you know, continuity problems, but nothing in the writing. The writing is like mwah,
solid,
and then the making of it is like, oh, you fucking you left that bit out now. Yeah. I think, but yeah. So if there's something there that you want to get in contact, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Reddit. We have the website, whypressplay.com, and we also have our Discord server. And if you like the show and you want to support us, patreon.com/whypressplay. Subscribe on Podcast Player and leave us a review. The star ratings or the written reviews, they really do count towards more people listening to it, and people do read those. So please go leave us a review. That's it for this time. info@whypressplay if you want to talk to us about anything, info@whypressplay.com. Thanks again, Steve, and good luck and goodbye.